Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
The internet audio.
Yeah.
There we go.
All right.
We got him. Got him. The legend in the house.
True. Mr. Rom-Com himself.
Where's your mic, man? You don't even have your mic next to you? This guy's so unprofessional.
I am.
That's me too, for sure. I'm doing good. Definitely. It made it through. In fact, I'm at a phase where I go back to work now. So I have a little stop in Oklahoma on my way to England to appear in Hannah 3. That's that Amazon show that Hannah 2, you know, second season I was in that just finished coming out recently. So lucky to have good work and to still have good work. So believe me, I'm blessed. I know it, and I wear it on my sleeve.
Well, as we are also recording this the day after an election that seems to never end. How are you feeling about that?
Nervous. My sister is she's a little bit on the inside of one of those super important blue ring suburbs of Philadelphia. So she even had a look at the rolls and stuff. I mean, she's a poll worker, but also it's not a council person there. What is she? She's not an alderman, a commissioner of the township of Bryn Mawr, right?
Oh,
so
wow.
She's kind of had a look, and I think Pennsylvania is probably going to do better than it seems like it might. So that's a key insight. They just kind of were calling it toward news outlets are calling Wisconsin Biden just now too. So I'm not breathing a sigh of relief in any way, shape, or form.
No, I went camping last night in Malibu, right? Like on the up by Leo Carrillo.
This guy's from California,
I mean, I haven't been camping since I was like 14, so just that alone. But I didn't have service, so I got there at like 6 p.m. and I left at 10:30, so I didn't know anything that happened. And I guess I would have expected to not have satisfaction, but leaving and just seeing like everything being a mess was
honestly, you're lucky, bro. That's a gift, because I was just up in my apartment. My roommates went up to Malibu too. Because they were like, I'm not trying to be here if Trumpito wins. And I'm just sitting in the apartment with my dog on the couch staring at the screen, slowly spiraling. As all these numbers come in, I was like, this is bad. I got to get out the house.
I know. So unusual. You know, gosh. I remember like Bush's second term, right? When he gets elected, there was some guy at the preschool who was, a real prick about it. Like, you know, because I was lost and all the other liberal seeming parents bemoaning this, bemoaning that. And he was like, ha, 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 ha. Just to see like raw pre-Trump Republicanism was pretty scary enough.
Yeah.
And you add the Trump factor and throw in a pandemic just to fuck things up, and an uprising in June that still hasn't been historically categorized. I'm all in, surviving it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we don't need to dwell on that too long. It's clearly all terrible. And we
right
don't
on, to, right but, on. Well, one of the answers is to keep people thinking about sports and comedy and entertainment. So, you know, some of that's a self-justification because that's what I do. But I've told myself that long enough that I'm starting to feel like maybe I was onto something. Like, no,
he's a frozen. He's
fucking frozen hell! Screen. Look how important it is, you guys. So thanks for your contribution.
Yeah,
That's a professional transition.
I was telling Chris that we met on the golf course, which I think is a great way to relax and get away. I literally didn't because everyone shows what masks on. First of all, for those listening, if you don't know who Owen Burke is, he golfs every Thursday. He's invited me for some reason 3 or 4 times. And it's all these like amazing actors, and then just like me, who they're like, "Why is this tall guy here? Like, why is Slender Man part of our group today? I don't understand why." And
why is Slender Man?
But it's everyone's got masks on, so I can't really tell who's who. So I didn't even know it was you until I can just see a twinkle in the eye, and I'm like, and then it literally didn't even click for me at all. I swear to God, until I said. Angels in the outfield, and you got real excited.
Oh, I was
and then I got real
fist
excited.
Pumping.
And I was like, oh,
somebody
shit.
Brings up Angels in the outfield. I'm like, yeah. Because, you know, and that'll quickly lead us to, you know, why you're so kind to invite me on your show. But I know you guys are out there, and I'm there for you. I want you to know all these years that it's meant so much to me, the rare and yet regular occasion where some guy would come up and either segue from Young Guns into Angels in the Outfield or just come up with that already right on his mind. So you'll explain to me what happened. I can probably add some insight, but I think it left a really lasting impact in the way only a few of the movies that I did did.
Well,
You obviously know that you've had bigger impacts in other movies.
Yeah,
because
like,
us
guy.
Just telling people about because I tell my girl every time we're about to record who's gonna be on, and this is the first time she ever lost her goddamn shit.
Yes, I told my writing partner, she responded in all caps. I was like, what should we ask him? She was like, what do you mean? She was like, you have to talk about best friend's wedding.
Yes.
Well, it is holy competition, shit. You know what I mean? And I'm still on the field, you know? So, you know, some sports have kind of a shelf life. Not to even equate this to a sport, but it is, you know, you are trying to, I don't know. Like one of those survival TV shows, you know, you can also outlast them. But the why I pause is because there is a different absorption for different types of projects. And so when we're on the golf course and you happen to bring up Angels in the Outfield, unless you'll be real with me, did you already suspect it was the guy that played the sort of bad dad in that movie and so you brought it up? Or did it come up?
That's exactly actually not. That's actually exactly what Rob that's what hit him, bro.
First
he was
of all,
like, oh, bad dad.
First of all, I have my own dad issues. Everyone who listens to the podcast knows this. It comes up every single episode.
That is true.
Every single episode. But I legitimately always reference pop culture like every 2 minutes. So it just happened to work out that way. But Chris, I don't know if I told you, but I literally hit a ball. Like I hit a very bad ball, like I did a lot that day,
yeah,
that went into the woods, but it popped back onto the course like someone just picked it up and threw it out. And I was like, that's some Angels in the Outfield shit. And then literally he just started like dancing. And I was like, why is he doing that?
Oh, my God. God. I'm totally saying it's me. But that's how I feel about this movie. Because it creeps up on me that way. And you flat out said it. Guys who are precisely your age that have father issues. This movie meant a shitload to them because I didn't write it. It's only about 4 scenes, but it knocked you guys right in the whatever, the balls or the heart. But I know it left a mark. And so that's what I mean. I'm here for you, man. You know. I've been here all along.
That's so fucking funny.
The penultimate deadbeat dad of all. Yeah, deadbeat
I mean, you
dads.
Had you had the Harley, bro, and a leather jacket. I was like, damn,
yeah,
that
the
dude.
Styling.
That like, dude what? Definitely was gonna leave you, fam. Like,
how you do you have like a 9-year old, anyways?
Like, I was like, JGL, person. You just gotta eat that. Like, that guy's not gonna be there for you. Before we lean in, though, Brianna will literally murder me. She told me to say to ask him. Brianna Porter wants to know, how does Julia Roberts smell?
What?
She's obsessed with Julia Roberts. She's obsessed with Julia Roberts, bro. And this podcast is slowly, two things. This podcast is slowly becoming 6 degrees of separation of New Girl, because you are also Mr. Fancy Man. And I was watching that whole story arc while I was writing today. And I was like, damn, Dervis did a lot of shit that I fuck with.
Hey, well,
I
think this is fucking crazy. Really, there's a really good scene, of course, where Jake Johnson is describing what I smell like on that show. So I didn't tell Brianna, but I understand the question. It comes up a lot. But I can also reassure her that Julia, you know, is exquisite in every way and remains that way to this day. And that's best as how I can answer that. But can you imagine? You can imagine what even just her hair would smell like if you knew her. So yes, is the answer is yes, without being too, you know, inappropriate or descriptive.
She's going to freak out. She's going to lose her fucking mind.
I did not see that coming
at all. You got to keep it in the pocket.
That was a curveball. All right, so back to Angels in the Outfield. How did you get involved with this?
Well, I have to admit a couple things before I answer that. I haven't seen it since it came out.
You haven't seen it?
Right. So, I mean, I'm...
Okay.
What, I am. I also have to admit...
I have never once watched it.
No, but that's sort of part of what we're talking about, because it was on, like, family rotation in so many households in that particular era, when people had VHS tapes on the shelf by the TV in their house. So that turns out that was just an exclusive period of time, but it contributed to that absorption factor that a few roles that I had in those years had, because the young preteen kid was sitting there watching the same thing over and over, which, you know, doesn't happen today. They'll play the same video game, but there's so much choice that you wouldn't see one movie 6 times necessarily, right? So I didn't do my research. I haven't seen it forever. I really didn't have time to even like look it up on IMDb. What year did it come out?
94.
Oh, yeah, 94.
So interesting. So that means we shot it in 1993, which was a very turbulent year to think about just Los Angeles in that year. If it's between riots and earthquakes and Biggie Smalls on Wilshire Boulevard, you know, this is really effing weird time.
Yeah, OJ trial was 93, I think, 94. Yeah, lots going on.
So that helps me put it in my chronology. But I think it was one of these movies that I'll tell you, that was still kind of in my first cycle, which might have come to an end then. If I'm starting 86, I don't know. I was really...
You had some bangers in that first cycle.
Incredible, really incredible. So this one was an offer for a studio movie, small part. I remember thinking, oh, well, it's only a small part. So, you know, your mentality when you're in the game is different, you know, over time anyhow. I don't think that same way now. I'd be precious with that part now. So I do have some like rewrite regrets, you know, not that I was ever inappropriate or didn't know that I was lucky to have it, but you know, it felt like kind of a big, small deal at the time. But so then it took me 10, 15 years before, of all the movies, that was still like a go-to movie that people would arrive to me with, you know, I mean, that they would approach me with in their mind. You know, they'd bring it up to me when they say, excuse me, you know, a movie. So that's when I started going, wait a minute. I knew I was going to be in a cool sports movie. I was all into it at the time. Danny Glover and Tony Danza in the same movie was big stuff. So I don't want to rewrite it. But some of what I do having to look back is wishing that I valued even the shorter experiences somewhat more while I was doing them. I think that might just come with age.
You also had a lot of scenes. I mean, your scenes basically all had Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Young JGL
who
in there.
Is like one of the biggest movie stars on earth now, too, and was just a child, like a terrible child actor.
I disagree.
Because he was popping as a child actor.
He goes, where are you going? Dad, where are you going?
Obviously, the Disney thing is not his greatest showing, but like my man.
No, I mean in this movie. I was about to say,
my man's been murking it as a child actor, bro. Like before he's got old enough to not look 12.
Let me tell you about Joe Levitt then, because I've only run into him once or twice in that intervening time, if you can imagine. So I had the most amazing vantage point to watch his career traject from there. He'd already been on Third Rock to the Sun, very popular sitcom right there at that
great
time.
Sitcom.
Yeah. But there too, I have since worked with a bunch of kids. You put a little asterisk. I don't mean nothing against anybody, but you look back and you realize, wow, that kid was super talented. He had a good family going and so forth. Because since then, sometimes you don't, most of the time, you don't get so lucky that the child actor is as good as you want. It's just really super hard to cast those kids. Anyhow, I knew at the time that he was a real actor and I really enjoyed him. And then, so of course, it was just money for me when I saw his career take off, and he works with the greatest filmmakers and collaborates so nice. I mean, I think he's fantastic. So, yeah. But he was 12, and what was that? 20, 30 right then. Yeah.
It was low-key. I went back and before I watched it again, looked at the IMDb, and it is absurd the list of people who
the
are
cast
in this
is
movie.
Crazy.
This cast makes no sense.
It's crazy.
A young ass Matthew McConaughey. You got Christopher Lloyd, Adrian Brody. I did not remember until I started watching. I was like, what the fuck? You got Hugh. You got Neil McDonough in here. Like this. Is just the most stacked Disney movie that I have ever seen.
It's amazing. So whoever's behind the wheel of that, casting those executives, you know, really props to who was spotting talent in those days. So McConaughey is a good example. I wasn't there for any of the baseball shooting. You got to figure, of course, I'm just in the drama part on the side. So I came in for a few days. Typically, they'll shoot all of your little locations. Maybe it's a courtroom and that little house and that street and stuff, all pretty much in the same days, and then pack you off. That's what I've been doing ever since then, you know. But the guys that are in there really, really earning their the SAG SAG pension are the kids that are gung ho and they go to baseball training and they got 3 weeks of this for two lines, and then you know you're like in the background in the movie and all that time. That you absorb it and you learn. But I didn't know who Matthew McConaughey was until about 2 minutes later when he also came off. I'm like, wait, wasn't that the guy from Angels in the Outfield? Yeah. How'd he get by me?
There's like Oscars among this cast, right? Like,
yes.
Like quite a few.
A fair amount, sir.
A fair amount.
You got... McConaughey and Brody both have one. I think JGL might have one just for association from one of the Dark Knight movies. Like, so that's three off top. Christopher Lloyd have something. Who knows?
Who knows? It's crazy. So you haven't seen it since it came out. So do you remember like the plot very well? Like, what do you remember about it besides your specific parts?
Yes, he did. From One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So that's five
Oscars.
That's
incredible, really. Is it William Deere, the director? Just to double check me the name.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I have since run into him one time and had to just stop his train and say, "Excuse me, I got to thank you so much for that." So he was instrumental in, you know, one thing I remember is here again, I wouldn't be shooting the baseball stuff. So it turns out I was not there when Tony Danza was working. So really ultimately it's to save money on the production. They got a huge ass trailer sitting in the parking lot, not being used. So on the days I worked, they put me in Danza's extra double wide, like length long. satellite. Life. Trailer. I'd never seen anything that big in my life. So, you know what I mean? So the thing's kind of in a weird proportion. I remember training with guys I knew, Hell's Angels. They knew a couple of these directors, and they were the first AD and security team on Young Guns. Deacon was one of these riders. Cisco Valderrama were their names. You could look them up on Young Guns probably better than you could. They'd be deep in the, you know, technicians credits. They might be technical advisors. Yeah. Anyhow, them. So I'd worked with them about 6 years earlier, and it turns out the same bizarre crew of like film loving Hell's Angels was on Angels in the Outfield, and they taught me how to ride that very heavy, very big bike in a parking lot in Oakland around cones and so forth. So can you picture me, scrawny, you know, 30-year-old, trying to look like I'm with the glasses and this, but really. You know, I'll never forget that, and grateful to them. The only one other time was I asked or necessitated that I be on a motorcycle. So I remember both of those as being full on white knuckle experiences. I had no love for that machine at all. Fear. Deep fear. And the scene you're talking
about. This is terrifying.
Where I pull up in front of his little, you know, project like house, right? That East Oakland, yeah. You know, neighborhood. I have to pull away on that bike, you know, to make the shot. So you do the shot where the bike's sitting there and you're just sitting on it and you talk. That part I can do. But they do need a shot of the dad pulling away. So I still remember, I think about it sometimes because I was nervous. I was really nervous to pull away on a big motorcycle that I'd already practiced. So I know Matthew McConaughey did all that baseball training, but I put in like an afternoon on a motorcycle. So I did my part.
hey, you got trained how to ride a motorcycle by Hell's Angels. You can brag about that.
The fact that I knew them was even really bizarre. That somebody's got to trace their. I've talked to some of the Young Guns guys. They all remember this crew. So someone should try and figure out their story and how they actually, it'd be like Sons of Anarchy PA, you know, on your set.
Right.
really cool mix. So I'll never forget that either.
Hell's Angel AD.
Hell's Angel AD.
You really got to listen to.
For real.
You really got to listen to that guy.
Let me run out and grab a. You know what? I'm going to have to move a little to plug my phone in. I got a charger right here. One sec, guys.
All good. That's funny as hell. That's a crazy idea to even think of. Like, homeboy is moonlighting as an AD. He's a Hell Angel during the daytime.
Yeah, what? I don't know a lot about, like, motorcycle culture. Aren't Hell's Angels supposed to be, like, actually dangerous?
They started as actually dangerous, and then they became, like, a just, like, a group. It's like a club. It's like a...
So they don't, like, beat people up.
I mean, I'm sure there are subdivisions of it. It's like a massive thing now, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like a big global thing. And so now how you like have like soccer hooligan groups that beat the shit out of people, and there are other soccer hooligan groups who just watch
every
soccer.
Opportunity to bring up soccer. No one likes soccer.
It's the
man.
Most applicable thing. No, that's not true. Literally, no, all of the world likes soccer, dude.
Nobody likes soccer.
All the world likes
they
soccer.
They like drinking
you're wrong.
In a stadium. They don't like soccer.
No, you're out of your mind. That's baseball. You're confusing.
You're confusing soccer with baseball. Baseball people don't like. Oh, I mean,
there's more scoring.
Oh, my bad.
No hitter than there is in soccer. You said you were filming in Oakland. Why? What was it in
isn't
Oakland?
Isn't that you know? Where?
Because that seems like it's not anywhere near.
No,
Angels
but
outfield.
This isn't California. Angels, this isn't stadium. Anaheim Angels. This was the like the Oakland Angels. It was a. It wasn't a real team. See, you're still falling.
Is that real? Am I not? Did
I think you may
that?
Not have ever
yeah,
noticed
no, it's
that.
It's not real. You were paying attention at the beginning.
I could be wrong.
It's not real team. When they give the whole speech, where he gives the speech,
what is
I don't think
the
he
speech?
Says the Anaheim Angels. They're like, they're talking about the news
yeah.
reporter talks about the team.
Then you
the
know
beginning.
What? They shot it up there in Oakland and East Bay and set it in Anaheim, if so. You know what I mean? I was, yeah. Again, you know, I haven't done my research.
Yeah, maybe they didn't say Anaheim. I just assumed it's Disney owns the Angels. They have for a long time. So I just assumed because they own them and they own the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. So I just assume they have all the rights to use the actual team, but maybe
we'll let the conspiracy theory begin. You think Disney's up to no good? Of course
you
they
can
are.
Google it at home. Yes, yes, 100%, 100%. What doesn't Disney own, honestly, is a better question. I right. feel like that's fewer.
Right. Well, now that Disney's been basically killing off the fairy mothers all these decades, right? You know, maybe the bad dad actually has a place in the Disney, Disney sphere. That I played in one of their old properties. Here's something I also remember about the movie that I've always regretted is that I smoked the cigarettes.
You actually smoked real cigarettes?
I was a smoker at the time. I don't think I put it in, but it was like key to the part.
I thought you were just
no, it might have even been in the script, but those would be the very, very waning days of smoking in a Disney movie, yeah. So there I was,
true.
Not a role model, but like I signified something to the boys that were your age when this movie came out. So I was always concerned that mixing smoking in with that was never wasn't a good idea. That I could have been a bad dad without being a smoker. Can you believe it? That's what I thought about all these years. No, I could have been an example of how to be in a more wholesome way.
I think there was actually a thing in this time period, because I was just watching, Dick? It's a movie about Watergate. But there was just a trend in this time period all the way up to the early 2000s where parents were either like drug addicts or drunks, and it was just played as humor. It was like, ha 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 ha, their parents are always fucked up. Like, what? They just were like rolled out with it. And like, everybody was like, it's hilarious. They're quirky. I was like, what? Like, that's a problem. Like, these kids can just do whatever the fuck they want because their parents are blitzed all day long. Like, I was like, okay, never mind. And they're the California Angels. It's not.
Yeah, that's what they were called back then. Specific. They were called the California Angels back then. Okay. I think they only became the Anaheim Angels. Like later, and then the Los Angeles Angels like 5 years ago. Right. So I still contend that it was the real Angels team, but who knows? They could have done anything because it is California. Yeah, it's interesting that you're like training with the Hells Angels, but you're concerned about a cigarette.
Yeah. They used to beat the shit out of people.
Now I'm definitely going to watch it, and I love thinking about this movie. See how much of it I just think about kind of on a regular basis, just flash through your minds or something. I see a motorcycle, I think, I trained with the Hells Angels for an afternoon. It'll occur to me. So no one's ever really asked. That's why I'm also tickled about this, you know what I mean?
No one's asked you about this movie? Like,
no, almost they never. Just, and that's why, too, I'm trying to explain to you, it's just you guys.
I was about to say, it's just people like Rod who are like, oh, my dad was there either. What's up?
First of all, it's a feel-good story.
Did you ever like go to like find a friend who's a therapist and be like, look, okay, so these kids keep coming up to me and venting to me about their dad not being there. I got to have some lines to give them
when they come up to me. I'm doing that now. You're capturing it live here today. And I'm acting here, my guilt about the smoking. And it's all in here, man.
It's a character, Rod. He's doing this because you didn't have this opportunity.
So I understand.
Rod, how old were you in 1993?
In 93, I was 9.
Bingo.
So, yeah, 9, 10 when this came out.
That's on the nose. Demo.
Oh, every single movie.
And about 1 and 2 and 3 years older than you. Only men, both black and white. And that's who I mean. It's so specific to just one group. And I know you're probably categorized, by a white guy.
No, I don't care.
I'm telling you, that's why I'm telling you it's a real thing.
First of all, I'm sensing a plot twist in Angels in the Outfield where the Hell's Angel smoking shitty white dad comes back to adopt his son once he realizes he's been taken in by a black guy. He's like, nope, can't have that.
He said, no,
start,
no, no,
start
no,
the process over again.
Call
start the process over again.
Call
the Angels win the pennant twice. We'll do this again.
Paul Joe Levitt. You got to make sure he can fit it into his schedule.
He said, my racism is stronger than my need to be a dirtbag dad.
Yeah, let me tell you this. Speaking of who we haven't spoken of is the great Danny Glover, of course. So he was at a true height of a multi-height career when we were making that movie. So I was really felt like I was in the presence of greatness. And of course, if you know anything about Mr. Glover, he's an activist from his childhood, from his parents' labor, on the side of the working man, and has been like fist up in the Bay Area since the dawn of time. So he's really righteous. And I ran into him again when we worked on the Hallmark movie, Christmas Train. Don't miss it. They're sure to show it about 12 times this coming next month. So it was really cool decades later to reunite with him, only briefly to say I was in that movie with you. And this is what he told me. He said he can still walk into a restaurant or certain rooms and someone will stand up and start waving their arms like a flying angel. He says they still do it with him. So those are you guys, you know, and that's why this movie means so much to me, is because it really touched people in a way that I wouldn't have known about at the time, you know.
Did you tell him, damn, that sucks. You get the wave and I get people going up. Yeah. My dad wasn't there either. I'd much rather have the wave.
I think I was able to share what it meant to me working with him, but now twice and really a third time too. So we've checked in with each other about every 12 years and he's doing good. And I was happy to tell him, you know, how this movie evolved and grew in meaning to me because of the people that would, on this weird, regular, but infrequent approach me about, you know, it stood out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that era was basically, because we've done a couple movies from that era, but it's, I don't know which one came first, but it's like The Sandlot, Little Big League, Angels in the Outfield, Rookie of the Year. It was like four baseball movies. And then it followed it up with like Mighty Ducks and
No, I'll tell you
Giants.
How it went. It went like this. And there's a movie called, what was Robert Redford's movie? The Natural. That was the first. The second, look it up and have me back for another chat. Long gone.
Yep.
It was the second movie HBO ever made. It was baseball league in the 50s, set in Florida, Gulf Coast League. Yep. So fun, incredible movie. And I played the hot new prospect on second base.
Oh, snap.
Rookie
from CSI.
To the manager, Cecil
William
Judge
Peterson.
Cantrell, played by the great William Peterson, Billy Peterson, was like the old guy. Of course, he was only about 33 at the time. But that movie, you guys, have a look at. It is an absolute gem. And it has its deep followers, too. And it is something else. Martin Davidson was the director. And he'd only done a couple of movies. I think he's probably gone now. But bless him for casting me early. That was like my fourth or fifth little job that took off. And that one, I got to do what McConaughey had to do on Angels in the Outfield, which is go through intensive baseball training, which, you know, could have been fun for some people, but for me, it was super grueling, really hard, and I'll never forget it. I love that movie, so enjoy that. That's a great sports movie. And then after that was Bull Durham, and then all the ones you're talking about. It went in that order.
I remember Bull Durham.
Yeah, and, I mean, I guess
the
ones I was talking about are like geared towards kids.
After Bull Durham, I think.
Field of Dreams would be the start.
I see what you mean, but I'm talking baseball movies. That was the order of them in the modern age.
Yeah, well then, yeah, you got to keep in
mind.
I used to get Field of Dreams and Angels in the Outfield for long gone.
It's much appreciated, but underknown, and really did a lot for the rest of those baseball movies because they watched Marty Davidson's footage, Robert Elswit, was turned out to be masterful, probably Academy Award winning cinematographer. He was young then too, so I've always remembered that. Long gone.
Boom.
I'm sure Eric probably is a huge fan of that.
That would, yeah.
You know Eric Edelstein?
Another Negro Connect.
He was on New, but he's, I guess he's in a lot of stuff, but he's most famous for getting eaten on Jurassic Park. They have like a whole like guy in like a belly suit at Universal Studios
and,
like, pretends to be like him getting eaten. Yeah.
If only I know
or Jurassic World, I should say the new
too,
one. Yeah.
I know what his contract says. It doesn't say anything about them giving him any money for being like portrayed in the ride. They own you.
Yeah.
Sorry, Eric.
This is true.
No extra cabbage for that.
He's my friend, you know.
So, do you remember any of the plot of Angels in the Outfield? What do you remember about the plot?
I do remember a courtroom scene where apparently you were still allowed to smoke in 93. So it wasn't good news for Joe Gordon-Levitt. I remember that. I remember they were way behind in the rankings, and that there was some, were they supernatural or maybe even heavenly spottings? Maybe that's out there in the bleacher seats or something, right? Weren't they starting to get wait a minute. There was a little boy. There was a couple little boys, a white boy and a black kid, and they were both, and then Danny Glover was in it. That's all. That's as good as I can do. That's all I got.
That man, he hit you with the Wikipedia. He said shit. That's pretty
that's
much like
accurate.
All the big points. Yeah. The white boy, Joseph Gordon Levitt, Sauce of Angels.
Where are you going, Dad?
Where are you going? Dad, where are you going?
Dad,
where are you going? He says it so casually, like, where are you going?
Yeah.
Dad.
I knew he was crushing it that day. I remember it. I remember like sitting on the side, and I also remember he had a really nice mother and or father there. So yeah. Good on.
I used to get this and Field of Dreams confused until I rewatched it to do this, because I kept waiting for them to say, if you build it, they will come. And I was like, the stadium's already there. I was like, what are they building? I was like, the stadium's there. It's built. Like, when are they going to say this shit? And I was like, oh, wrong movie. Okay. That's on me.
Yeah, I guess, Chris, you were like born in 92, right?
92, yeah.
Yeah,
so you'd be watching them on the second go-by and catching them in a slightly different way.
Yeah, I had it on VHS, but it was like a, oh, look, cool. Like, you know, like, my mom was like, put this shit on and watch it so you could go away. But it doesn't have the same effect to me. Also, you know, Rod, this is one of his big things to bring up. I didn't have to ask Dad, where were you going? My parents got divorced. He was still there. My parents got divorced, but I mean, we split
I had that
time.
Conversation.
Dad, where are you going? Dad.
He promised he'd pick me up after if the Lakers won the chip.
The funniest one I ever heard, the only time I had to pull a car over for laughing, was Big Boy. You know him on the radio? He moved around stations all the years.
Yep.
But this wasn't that long ago. He was telling a story in an interview to somebody where his daddy hadn't seen him forever, and it's in the neighborhood. He said, he's so good. He sets up the whole scenario, and then his dad says, now I'm going to go out for a pass. And he starts running, and the father keeps running, and he keeps running. And he turns the corner, and he's gone, and he never sees him again. And he told it so well, like it had actually happened, and then yanked the person. It's masterful. I don't know if it's like one of his routines or not, but I caught it one day. So maybe you'd find a random, radio joke from way back. But anyhow, how would you rank your baseball movies then of all the you listed? They all have their different impacts, but do you have favorites? Do you play favorites that?
Sandlot.
Yeah, I think the Sandlot is clearly the biggest
Sandlot's
one.
The numero uno.
And then I would say Angels in the Outfield, then Rookie of the Year, then Little Big League in that order. I think that Little Big League, I don't know if you've seen any of these other movies I named, but they all have like a crazy, except the Sandlot's just a real story. I mean, it's a big dog, I guess, but it's basically just kids in the 50s. It doesn't make sense because there's a black kid in the group who, like, gets no hate in the middle of Ohio or wherever they're at. But The rest of it's pretty legit.
Wait, and you say he the other gets three no have crazy hate?
Premises.
Right.
No so hate.
That in the 50s.
No hate.
In the 50s, like,
doesn't make any sense. They let him swim in the public pool. This, like, literally was illegal.
Oh, my God.
It's so unrealistic as hell.
Nobody yeah. said one
not
word.
One in drop.
And there's a lot of insults in that movie, but not one.
I gotta be honest. My whole childhood, I was like, "Oh, this has to be the '90s," because there's like, there okay, ain't nobody so saying nothing crazy.
What's
like,
your
just
drop,
running around
what's your
enjoying
favorite
himself?
Insult from that movie?
From that, I mean, the catcher will sit there and say a bunch of stuff. I forget what he. He said something to the other team. I haven't watched it. When we do it, I'll prep more and I'll know. But he said something to the other team while they were pitching that I really thought was hilarious. And I can't recall.
Of course,
exactly
my
right
favorite
now.
Baseball movie after the several in which I appear is Bad News Bears, right? Because that was right on time for me. And yeah. that kid called the other kid a booger-picking moron in that movie, and we never forgot it. It was so bad. Booger-picking moron. I still call people that from that movie. Best insult? Jodie Foster.
A booger-picking moron. Yeah, that sounds like a joke from 1976.
That is fact.
You son of a biscuit-eating bulldog. With the French toast.
With the French toast. With the French toast.
I'm trying to think. I don't think they had a black kid on that team, though. Sorry. Jodie Foster, you know, they were gender progressive. And she's, you know, she was a, I was a huge fan of her starting then, you know, right up through course.
I mean, Jodie Foster did look like every other boy on that team. Like they all had the same hair. They all look like little Swedish children. So she blended right in.
Yeah, but I would say all the movies, they all had crazy premises. But Angels in the Outfield, I feel like, delivered the best. Like, Rookie of the Year is when this kid tears his arm. And then when it gets rebuilt, he can throw, like, 100 mile an hour. Which is like nothing in today's game. He's just an average pitcher, but in 1994, it seemed like that was insurmountable.
Wait, what was the number?
Getting a 12-year-old on the team. It was really like 100.
He literally like he hits the gun and it shows 100, and they're like, put him in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Because nobody can
we
do this.
We need him. You can't stop that.
And then the little big league is a 13-year-old becomes a manager of the Twins. But he's actually like very like intelligent about baseball, so it's like a baseball purist kids movie, because he's like literally like he's like hey, I'm looking at the numbers, the analytics say I got to bench a guy, and the guy's like, you're 11, I don't want to hear this. And he's like, well, I own the team too, so you got to make a choice.
You want to play or which one? You want a contract?
And Wild Thing, don't forget about Charlie.
Yes, Major League is so. A little story about Major League. What's the black guy's name? Like some like African sounding name. I forget what his name is. He does like the big balls dance when he hits home runs, right? When he's running to first base. He's, and
the Geico man.
Yeah, the safe driver.
The safe
40%. But when I
Pedro Sarone.
Pedro. Yeah. So in Korea, when I won my first championship, there was I hit a game winner, and it wasn't a buzzer beater, but there was like 12 seconds left. And as I was running back, I do the big balls dance from Major League, because I'm just like, I'd never done it before and never done it since, but there's so many pictures of me online. Like, I look like a crazy like spider monkey with like just one hand up and one hand down, like doing the full Major League big balls.
I know, they used to just have to do it once and put it in a movie, right? And that, now you do it once and it becomes a gif, and you know they'll get you to last forever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry about that, monkey. The big balls dance.
I wasn't mad at it. I'm glad this can still be looked up.
There
so
are
people know
so many
I'm not
baseball
to be
movies.
With. There's more baseball movies than any other sports
it
movie by
to,
far.
It's ridiculous.
Why you suppose
it is?
You
so
have
many.
A little more time to talk during the game.
America's pastime.
I think it's just it was so popular. Baseball until basically the end of the steroids, like home run race, until that lockout in like 98 was far and away the most popular sport in America, and it wasn't close.
It's ridiculous.
Was not close. So like when I was growing up, my mom what she made me play baseball, and she like really never put me in basketball. And she's like, she had this idea where she grew up that like if you played baseball, you'd be successful. You played basketball, you'd end up doing cocaine with Magic Johnson or some shit. I don't know.
I heard that.
I don't know. I'm not saying that that's a fact. Oh, I'm saying God. I believe that's what my mom believes.
I'm so happy I said that quietly.
Until it wasn't.
We all make choices.
Not everybody had Magic Johnson money.
Not everybody had a good time.
Exactly.
Bless Magic.
Holy shit. One nosebleed and shit
gets real
bad. I know
Eazy-E was probably there. Right. Anyways.
Oh, fuck.
Too soon?
We both said back-to-back problematic things. I said one nosebleed.
I heard there was one big party with Freddie Mercury, Eazy-E, and
oh,
Magic Johnson.
Oh, my fucking God.
And they were all just getting real wild.
She got out of pocket.
He died. All of them did.
But yeah, baseball was just bigger than everything else for so long. And I think that the stories, like really, like especially when you have stories like Jackie Robinson and Hank Aaron and all these guys where they like the story of baseball tied in with the story of America for a long time. Now it doesn't really represent America at all. It's like the story of Cuba. But back then it was really like an American.
I mean, yes, I know. And I know it isn't the same anymore. Yeah, so that always makes me concerned about the talent stream too, you know, because then the teams start not being as exciting and then less kids play and then they get less resources. And then they got shit less to do after school and the whole system breaks down. So, you know, sport brings a lot of fucking cocaine with Magic Johnson, but, you know, there's a lot of structure. And, you know, it's all about the fundamentals, guys. And if you lose that, what, at the school level and up from there. I take that back. It's not cool to say like that, but you know what I mean?
We all take it back.
No, none
of this is real.
No.
Stand by it.
You trim out what you need to trim out, but...
What are you, did you play sports growing up?
I played soccer. Yeah.
Yeah. Look at you. Fuck you, Rod. I told you. Soccer.
I was like second year into professional acting. When I mean I needed to train to learn how to play baseball, I really had to learn it. I played a little bit on the side yard, a little wiffle ball here and there, but never played baseball. Can catch anything. I got good hands, and you even see it in the movie. But I could barely get it from first base. Certainly not over to third.
the throw, a baseball throw is surprisingly very difficult. Yeah. I always love seeing people who are like strong or like look athletic try to throw a baseball and just whiff it. Yeah, it's just the most really entertaining thing.
What? Really
it's so
basketball, if I was lucky, I was close to 5'10", but I had three brothers, 6'6", 6'1". So, poof, right in my face all afternoon, every day after school. So I never got that figured out. Never got a shot. Couldn't even get a clean fadeaway because I was kind of small, kind of weak. So
soccer works perfectly.
Here's the problem. I only got as far as JV 10th grade, but you know, GW High School, Alexandria, Virginia champions that year. But I had to sit the bench and play the 12th because I had to go as far as the school board to get a waiver so I could go to cello lessons on Thursday afternoon and miss soccer practice.
Oh, wow. See, so you play cello still?
I still do. Hang on. Hang on one second. One second. Let me answer that with this on Zoom. Cool, guys. You back? Yeah. Right on.
Yep.
What'd you ask me? Yeah, I still play cello, which is also phenomenal to be able to do that. So maybe, you know, I wouldn't still be. Anyhow, yeah, that's what I did in high school, was like try and fit sports in, but I was really in the orchestra and had rehearsals for this group and that. So that was it. I was in the school council, et cetera. So a little too busy for sport. But I was also, once again, I wasn't the right size for a couple of the sports. I didn't.
When did you make the acting pivot? When do you go like this is what I, when did that bug?
Well, really, as a kid, there was like a neighborhood group that put plays on in their backyard in the summertime. So I got hooked early. I really did. I did a couple of plays in high school. So you can't do a play and be on. Too small for football. Didn't have a shot and couldn't play baseball. So I didn't have that many choices. But I've always been athletic. You saw me have a pretty good game, at least long ball on the golf course. But, I could always get the other things done, snow sports and water skiing and stuff. But, that doesn't go very far.
What was the first time in acting you left the stage or you left, if it was on camera, you were like, I fucking did that. I just
know. Oh, gosh. It's out.
Like, who's the first?
I don't know. Before? It's so elusive, that sensation. I mean, at least in sports, you get a number, right? Or some stats, something that you can, really count. So that's what makes it an art form instead of, athletic. And that's why I'm still chasing it, to always try and get that feeling. It's tough. It has to be all the right conditions, great script, other actors, directors, locate. If you're on a crap movie, it's never going to happen. But you might have one afternoon where you say that line really good, And so you're like, what would that be like? A base hit, right. And then the next guy strikes out, and you go sit down, So it's tracks. Very, very right. Elusive. I remember a couple, obviously I've got peak moments of acting. I've worked with the greatest actors, or among, the most great actors America could give you. So that the dining room table with Julia and Meryl Streep and 12 other people in August Osage County, we shot that scene 22 minutes. It's in the film word for word. Took us 3.5 days to shoot it. So that was like its own long haul, peak moment. Early on, I remember finding my character in Young Guns, playing that character, Dirty Steve. I only had a few lines, a line here, a line there, but always in the group. And then by the end of week two, I felt it. I can still remember, get a chill from that feeling. Suddenly in there too, because you're on horses, you're actually doing it. It's a different time. You're in a remote location. You start to actually feel it. So that is the best, where you're actually another person. Yeah. So when that stuff kind of washes over you, it's supreme. That's what we all look for. The conditions are rarely ripe for that,
True.
We do improv. Yeah, so the closest I can come to that is, that's how I met Owen, was through UCB. But getting off stage and being like, we just killed
we
it.
We fucked that shit up. It's we over. Fucked that shit up.
Don't follow us.
Don't come after that. Don't come after that.
That's going to be difficult.
We were in the zone. Like, every joke was landing.
What'd you do with that pizza? What'd you do with that pepperoni pizza?
Killed it.
Yes, and no, I know. And in fact, another peak moment for me, I auditioned for and got into the very exclusive annual improv comedy show at Northwestern University. So that was a formative because the people I met, but also it led to an agent in Chicago that led to click, click, click on the dial. Right. I had 2 years in that troupe, and that helps you become a really good actor. Of course, even if you're saying the other lines, you're thinking on your feet and listening in different ways. So I always still flash back to those lessons and that value of, being ready to adjust or what have you. And it's just one of the things that's part of what I do. I was so lucky to get that experience with super funny college improv troupe. Amazing.
That is it.
So the question I have, this will probably be my last big question, but I think you're considered to be like a sex symbol. What is it like being that, where everyone who meets you like attaches you to, I mean, obviously people my age attach you to Angels in the Outfield, but every other woman is like my best friend's wedding, my first crush. Is that like Is that like crippling, or did you just have like a really cool 90s that we don't need to get into the details and Magic Johnson was there?
Yeah, you married. We don't got to talk about it. We don't got to talk about it. We don't got to go into details. Just, you know, broad strokes.
Just a wink and a nod.
Somewhere I do have an amazing picture with me and my dog and Magic Johnson at LAX. He was so kind to stop. And that really is in his peak, late 80s or something. Black and white photo. So, really, that's how I see Magic Johnson. That he gave me a moment of his time, and you know, all love and respect there. What was the question?
Well played. No, well played, I'll tell you what, professional.
In terms of being so called, what have you? That you, the terminology you're using, it's been really, really easy recently because I haven't seen anybody. You know, I don't get anywhere. there's been a little pause in any of that kind of hoo-ha, but I will say this, that I'm constantly recognized. Only about 80% of the time do the people know it's one thing or another, you know, what they know me from. But the
right.
Yeah.
The knowledge that someone's seen your face, or a lot of times even behind, you know, they'll turn when they hear me talking. So, you know, I have a, you know, interesting, a lot of actors have slightly different varieties of recognizability or fame or celebrity, but those don't, you know, neither of those words really apply to me so much as like recognizable, you know, that's probably more apt, or that's how it plays in my life. But what I want to say is that I've never been hassled by anybody ever. So if I ever thought, oh, I wish I played one more tough guy instead of always being so, you know, facey, I can never complain because of the goodwill that has come back at me from those lighter roles or comedic turns and so forth. So it's amazing. Everyone approaches me, or did when people could, with a smile. So it's just I'm banking it back and back and back. So that's why I say what you're doing seems like you're just sitting there, you know, with microphones, but you are giving back from your experience and your sense of humor. But you know, you're doing what you're supposed to do, same as me. So you know,
that's what's up.
Yeah, that's Jiggy. Okay, yeah. I have one question. Brianna's was her best friend's question. Mine is, how old was your character? Because Cameron Diaz is 20 years old in my best friend's wedding. Are y'all like 32? Like, aren't you supposed to be in your 30s? Because she says back when we were 28. So I was
You got it a little bit wrong. Let me straighten you out.
All right, drop it for me. Drop it for me. Go ahead. Hey, you were in it.
When
you were in
we're
it.
28, she calls out of the blue and says, hey, we're 28. And we said, that's when we'll get married. So I'm calling and I say, I'm so glad you called because I'm getting married to Kimmy. If they said Kimmy's 20 in that movie, that must have been in the 90s when, you know, like 20-year-old beautiful blonde women got married. So you'd have to like update that too with some of the wardrobe, but otherwise it totally translates. So yeah, I was 32 at the time. She's open about what age when, but even when we were like rehearsing the movie, I said, doesn't it make more sense that they would have said when they're 30 if they don't, because then we can play 30. And it seems like the conversation when you're in college would have been, hey, if we're not married by 30. And Julia turned to me and she said, it's 28. it remains 28 to this day. So that's why I'm good on the numbers. I'm glad you asked.
All right, that makes sense.
Said 28.
Saying, excuse me,
sir. We're not going to be 30 in this movie. That's a great way.
No, motherfucker. It's my niece and I'm Julia Roberts.
Well, that's all I got, man.
No,
do you have anything?
I have one.
You should ask people where they can find you and follow, but what's that?
Oh, no, it was the week after. Were you there when I lost that ball on the eighth hole?
Oh, yeah, fuck, I don't know where your drive went. That was wild. Perfect drive on this dog leg right. We're all just celebrating how beautiful the shot was. We get ball there, and he's looking for the
which
ball
I
for like 15
do.
Minutes.
I don't care. Except and it's like refined. It was just that. Oh, I had just the line, and
it's so perfect. Gone. You had to find it.
There's nothing like losing a ball that was a perfect shot, because then you're like, you have so many goddamn questions, and you want the satisfaction of seeing where it landed.
Isn't that the synopsis of Angels in the Outfield? Wasn't there something about that ball or the thing? If it's flying, or is it you lose it or something?
I don't know anything about that.
I don't know about that. I don't know if he loses it.
Yeah. They had some magic on that, too.
I appreciate the pullback.
It is coincidentally the same hole where I said it's Angels in the Outfield.
Okay.
I hit mine into the bushes, and he hit a perfect drive.
He hit a perfect drive.
The Angels saved mine, and they stole his, I guess.
Oh, man. Thank you so
much. You were in the movie.
I can't thank you enough. Rod, just to even get to meet you and enjoy that afternoon, we'll do it again. But to have me on today, I really appreciate it.
I appreciate
you coming, man. Yeah, thanks for giving
us
your time.
Not at all.
This is dope.
And make sure you send what have you a link so I can follow you guys and enjoy what you do, because this was a blast for me today.
Absolutely, will do.
Yes, sir.
Have a good rest of finding out who won the election.
Peace, guys. Speak soon. Have a good one. Thanks so much.
All right, brother. Have a good one.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.